Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How's it going?
It is going great. How about you?
I'm doing well. We were just talking offline that it is Olympic Marathon Trials Week. And I know there's a men's race as well, but I don't know about you. I pretty much only pay attention to the women's race. And I don't think we're alone.
Yeah. You know, I have been paying attention recently a little bit just to the men's race, just because I realized I hadn't even thought about the men's race or heard, you don't really hear as much. I think the women's field is much deeper. I think that's probably why we're hearing a lot about it. And I don't know, there are a lot of very visible athletes in the women's race. So, and look, we're, you know, our demographic and our world revolves around women's running. So not that we don't, you know, coach men runners or pay attention to men runners, but that's kind of where our, you know, our social circle, that's what we hear about a lot. But yeah, I think the field is just so incredibly deep for the women's field. And to me, I am super impressed with the breadth of the competitors. And not only that, but I don't know if you know, but there are 33 moms in the field, and many of them are kind of top seeded with the fastest qualifying time. So I think that's really cool. And the oldest runner is Dot McMahon, who's 47, the oldest qualifier. So that is, I think that's just, it just shows kind of the diversity and the breadth of the qualifier, women qualifier.
Yeah, for sure. And also I love that it's the most diverse field of entrance yet. Amelia Benton wrote an article about that. I think it just came out this weekend, and I thought it was a really nice piece to recognize that and very much appreciated that. And then for those who may not subscribe, we encourage you to do so. Fast Women, Allison Wade's newsletter. She has a really nice summary and highlights, not all of the runners that are competing in the trials, but many of the women runners, and it really is a nice synopsis. So Lisa, we talked also offline about our predictions, and I just wondered, do you have any predictions of who you think is going to be in the top three?
I mean, it's so hard because there's so many really talented runners and a lot who I think are kind of under the radar, who, you know, we don't get a ton of attention, who I wouldn't be surprised if somebody surprises everybody and kind of, you know, somebody who hasn't been discussed a lot comes out on top. I mean, I think Emily Sisson's in great shape. She's coming in, you know, with a really strong season, top US women finisher in Chicago. So like a lot of the runners I'm looking at were in Chicago when I was in Chicago, and I'm thinking like they're just in fabulous shape. Kira D'Amato is just kind of a fan favorite. She's, you know, from not far from us. We followed her career for a long time. I think she's in amazing shape. I think she thinks she's in amazing shape. Like, I think, you know, it's just ever all signs point to that she's in great shape. So I definitely think the two of them. Then after that, like, I just don't, you know, I don't know. There are definitely others that are on there. I know a few that you're kind of keeping your eye on. I'd be interested to see what happens with Nell Rojas. You know, she I think she had a half marathon PR recently, and like that to me means she might be in really good shape. Again, some of these people, like, we just may not be popping out on our radar because they didn't maybe race a fall marathon or a really fast fall marathon. They may have done a harder, you know, like a harder course, or didn't do a fall marathon. Maybe they were injured early in the year. But some of these runners, I think, could be in really good shape. So that's kind of what I think, but I want to hear what you think.
So when I was thinking about it, it changes every day. So today, my predictions are, just like you, Emily Sisson, I feel like unless something goes completely awry, I just feel like she's so consistently strong, and I think we'll be able to handle this Orlando course really well. Betsy Saina is another one who, she's super talented, super consistent, and also someone who I don't think seems phased under the stress and the spotlight of the trials. And I'm not saying we can tell who is phase and who isn't, but she just is someone who puts her nose to the grind and works. And I wouldn't be surprised if she's a top three contender. And Gabby Rooker, I love her story. I think so many of us have enjoyed hearing her story as a former gymnast turned runner. She's so strong and relatively new. And you and I talk about this. It's not as much about your running age when you're young, but more about the number of years. And she's an example of someone who's a relatively new runner, but very, very consistent athlete overall. And I think both of those things will play well. But I also feel like we need to acknowledge, of course, Molly Seidel. Like, look what she pulled out. And she's been pretty quiet over the past few weeks. And she's someone who clearly, I mean, she won the bronze. I wouldn't be surprised if she was top three again. And then a local person, just like Kira D'Amato, that you and I both love, is Susanna Sullivan. I mean, she's a teacher. She continues to get better and better. She's such a consistent and strong racer. And if she were a top three, not only would it be so exciting, but it shouldn't be surprising given the number of years that she's been competing and continues to improve. As far as the guys, I feel like Scott Fobble is someone who will definitely be in the top three, top two. With the men, it's weird. There are only two spots, but there likely will be three men sent. But right now, and thinking about the two spots, I think Scott Fobble will be one of them. I know Galen Rupp is always a top contender. And CJ Albertson, I wouldn't be surprised if he was a top two as well. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. It's very exciting. I wish that you and I could be there. I know we talked about it a year ago, but this weekend is crazy for both of us for different reasons. And especially for you, Lisa, you realize the conflict, if you want to share this weekend, that will not enable you to attend the trials, but one year we'll get there, but we will be eagerly watching like everyone else. And we can't wait to talk about it on the podcast next week.
Yeah, I do want to add on the men's side. I've been looking at, I don't know if you've seen, and again, it goes back to kind of Chicago, Connor Mance and Clayton Young, who trained together, who had like really great races at Chicago. And I've listened to a few podcasts with one or both of them. And just, they're, you know, they're training partners. They play off each other. I think they could work really well together in this, and that may benefit them. So I've got my eyes on them to be up there. And again, you're right, like Scott Fobble. I feel like Galen's had the health issues. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, but I feel like he's had some health issues that, who knows, again, runners can be coming into this in great shape after having injury or health and, again, flying under the radar. But yeah, Connor Mance and Clayton Young, I really like kind of their, just, you know, their story and their, the fact that they've trained together and how they've really worked together. So I wouldn't be surprised if that like benefits them in this race. And I think something else we all do have to think about is the weather. And it's always been an issue in changing the start time, which was originally supposed to be noon and now is 10 a.m. But I haven't looked too closely. I looked a little bit at the Orlando forecast, but temperatures look okay. But remember, it's not always the temperatures, it's the dew point and the humidity. So looking at runners who've run well in heat, like Emily Sisson, you know, those runners who can do well, knowing, you know, ourselves as runners, how we fare better sometimes in heat and humidity than other runners who are more sensitive to it. So I think that's something to take into account on this, at this race. I think what's different than Atlanta 4 years ago is the course looks like kind of a better course, like longer, big straightaways, flatter. Like it's going to be a nice, I feel like it's going to be a good course to really race, to really put out. So again, you have to think about like, what's the course, what's the weather like, start time, all of that. Some runners I think are more comfortable with a later start time. Some runners may not be. So like what, you know, how does the course and the timing play into the strengths of the runners? So it'll be great. I'm excited, you know, to follow along and see what happens. And well, if we can follow up after this weekend and kind of reflect on what happened and, you know, how our predictions played out. But it's cool because, you know, I think this is the nice thing about running and marathoning is we get it. Like we're all runners. We're all like, we can't look at professional football players and understand what they're going through before the Super Bowl, but we can look at runners, professional or runners who qualified for the Olympic trials and understand what they're going through in the week before and during their goal race.
That's a great point. I mean, to some extent, like what they're going through is definitely different than us amateurs, but absolutely in terms of just thinking about hydration, fueling. And I can't remember which runner. I think it's actually Molly Seidel who told a story about before running the trials, which was her first marathon. She really didn't know her fueling plan that well and was kind of guessing what to do. And I just loved that. I remember because I was thinking that's like so many runners. We have a fueling plan, but then the night before you sort of second guess, I'm not sure about this. And so those nerves absolutely are totally normal. And I really like your point about the banter with respect to Connor Mance. And I think that's so true. They run really joyfully. They seem to really enjoy the process. And when you train relaxed and you're having fun with it, that yields great results. So I've no doubt there'll be many stories out of this race. And I think you're right. The wind in 2020 coupled with that course made it really rough. It also was advantageous. I mean, Des placed fourth. And I mean, I know that she was disappointed with that, wanted to place third, but that's phenomenal that she placed fourth. And she's, of course, running again this year. She's someone who thrives under hard conditions. So I remember when they announced that the trials were going to be in Orlando and they were starting even later, she tweeted something that was controversial, but she meant it for herself. The conditions are the conditions. And I think for her, it's an advantage when she is presented with tough conditions because she's such a tough and smart marathoner. So anyway, I guess we can't count her out either if that's the case, but yeah, fun conversation. I guess we'll have to wait and see. And this is like our Super Bowl. So I love that. It's just a week before the actual Super Bowl.
I mean, we should have like a squares, like, you know, with betting.
Yes. I was just going to say, I think what's also really encouraging is think about the coverage of the trials. When we started really becoming interested in them, I think it was around 2012, we were starting to really engage and watch the trials. It was almost impossible to see any coverage. And every 4 years, of course, it's gotten better. And this year, it's going to be not only on NBC, but also on Peacock. And that's great. I mean, I'm so excited that there will not only do we not have to hunt for the coverage, but there's actually a plan with, I'm sure the women's race will be covered just as much, if not more than the men's race, because like we talked about the women's race, the tee up for it has gotten so much coverage. So that better be the case. So NBC, if anyone happens to be listening, please cover the women's race. But coverage will be live on Peacock from 10 to 1 Eastern Standard Time. And then NBC will be covering some tape footage as well as live footage from noon to 3 Eastern Standard Time. So it'll be great. My hope is maybe by 2028, the next round of trials, perhaps beforehand, there'll be some kind of cool Netflix documentary or something that documents running a little bit more, because there is such a loyal and robust audience out there that's craving this kind of content.
So it's interesting. Do we think the NBC coverage is noon to three because it was originally planned for a noon race and that's what they blocked out? I haven't followed any of that, but it's interesting that NBC is covering it noon to three. I mean, I guess they'll clearly then cover the finish. They're not going to cover the whole live race, but I wonder if that's, you know, how that ties into the time change, but in any case.
Yeah, that is interesting. I'm sure there's some sort of issue with that. I'm sure you're right, because that coverage time doesn't align with the race anymore and they probably couldn't switch it around.
Maybe. I don't know.
Gotta wonder if it was football.
They're not starting till noon. They'll be like, oh, here we trained in. We got a few more minutes before people finish.
I mean, if it was football and they changed the game, they would change the coverage. It's so interesting. Whatever. Yeah. We'll take what we can get, right?
Exactly.
All right. Let's get down to business. So we're doing a coaching episode this week because we are now hitting, when this episode is released, it will be February. And we are in the throes of Boston training, as we talked about a little bit last week. Basically, we've got about 2 months until taper time before Boston. And that is plenty of time to not only train for Boston, but make some tweaks to optimize your training. So today we're doing a coaching episode and we are providing tips for mastering the Boston Marathon as a master's runner. Now, these tips, of course, can apply to those who are not yet master's runners as well. But the reason we're focusing on these tips for master's runners is because, number one, so many first-time Boston marathoners, so many are master's runners. And number two, so many of our listeners are master's runners. And number three, so many of these tips actually make even an even bigger difference, significant difference for master's runners versus open runners. But there are tips that can apply to all runners. And we thought this through, and we hope for those listening that you find this helpful. And even if you make a few of these tweaks, we hope that this makes a difference in your training. And if it does, reach out and let us know. We love to hear feedback from our listeners and appreciate feedback so much. So yeah, let us know. So the reason we really also wanted to focus on master's runners is because for many runners, you actually become faster as a master's runner, especially women. And we believe that's because when people become faster as a master, it's because they're making some specific tweaks that really make a difference in their ability to optimize their training. And those tweaks have to do with not only training itself, but also recovery and mental performance. So those are kind of the three categories that we wanted to talk about today. And we're going to start out with tweaks in your training that you can make right now to optimize your training. So Lisa, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, sure. And I think why we're talking about tweaks is that we could get away with a lot of things when we were younger that we can't get away with as we age. As much as we'd like to think that nothing's changing, we've seen over the years coaching runners who are obviously getting older as we're coaching them, and we've seen in our own running that that we've had to make some tweaks, and some people need to make more tweaks than others, but that we need to kind of analyze our training. And the biggest thing that we emphasize over and over again, and anyone listening will get sick of hearing this from us, but running easier. And that ties back into our need as we get older for more recovery. And it was specifically with respect to the marathon, trying to get in more weekly mileage, weekly mileage is really going to make you stronger at the marathon distance, but you cannot get in that volume of mileage at faster paces or even the fast end of your easy range. And I used this analogy before, and we've talked about this a lot before, but if you can get the same benefits, the same aerobic development at an easier pace than you can as you can at a faster pace, getting the same benefits in the end, why would you run at the faster pace for no more benefits, but you're putting more wear and tear on your body. So if you know you can ease it up a little bit and get the same benefits or even more of those benefits, because more aerobic development, you're actually working in that aerobic zone, and get in more mileage and avoid injury more, especially as we get older, then why would you not do that? What is the point of running kind of that fast end or high end of your aerobic range, or not even into threshold, not even promoting aerobic development? Like, what is the point of running there if you can get the benefits we're looking for at that easier pace?
Absolutely. And some people really struggle with this. The pattern I've seen lately, the struggle has to do with it feels like my stride feels off. That's not an issue with your pacing. That's probably an issue with your cadence. So that tells you to work on your cadence, which is another tweak, because the higher your cadence, the more efficient you are as a runner, the more economy you have and efficiency you have, the slower you can run, the easier you can run, and the better you can recover. Another reason folks tend to run faster than their prescribed easy pace is because of Strava social media. So turn off your Strava for this training cycle, so you're not thinking about what you're going to present to the world when you finish up your run, and you'll actually save time because you won't have to think about the title of your run or explain what you were doing during your run to justify your easy pace. And another reason is running partners. So that's a communication issue to me. Explain to your partner, hey, listen, I have this goal. I am so hoping to really nail it at Boston. And for me to be able to nail it, I have got to run easier on my easy days. If you feel like you can't do that with me, I totally understand. Let's meet up together. We'll start together. You run ahead of me. We'll finish together. Grab a coffee. It's communication. And I have a feeling that most people out there if it's communicated and it's clear, they'll be able to convince their partners to run easier with them. And their partners will find that it's making them faster too, whether or not they're training for a marathon.
Yeah. I think another reason that people have difficulty running easier, slowing it down is expectations in their head of themselves, comparing themselves to 10 years ago. You know, I always ran at an 8:30. That my easy run was always at an 8:30 pace. Now that I'm running nines, I can't, you know, I don't want to see over nine on my average pace, but you know, it's 5 years later, 10 years later, 2 years later, different conditions. And I think that's what we have in our heads is kind of this expectation of what our easy pace is that has to evolve over time and in different conditions.
Yeah. Especially with that easy pace still yields around the same results. What's the difference? Who cares? That just means you're running smarter.
Yeah. I look 20 years apart. I'm running the same marathon times and my training paces are not dramatically different because I've always kind of been an easy pace runner. But, you know, 20 years ago, my easy runs were probably in the 8:30s. Now they're in the 9:30s, still getting the same marathon results, just slower, easier training because my body, that's what my body needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's consistent across the board with you, Lisa. We've talked about this a lot. You've had a great year of running and all of your race times reflect exactly what you did 20 years ago, even as recently as when you competed and won the gold medal in the Maccabi Games, you raced around the same time, a little faster actually, at a half marathon, yet your easy paces are much slower than what you were probably training at 20 years ago. So yeah,
yep.
And yep. You're not an anomaly. I mean, it really does work. There's plenty of professional runners out there who are doing the same. And I mean, as recently as last week, our guest, Liz Kamey, who is competing in the professional division at the Boston Marathon, we interviewed her and she ran her PRs 2:42. And she runs some of her easy runs in the 9 to 9:30s. And that was the big difference that Liz made with her running as a master's runner is she slowed down her easy paces. So that's huge. So yeah, we clearly talk about this a lot, but it's worth repeating. So we continue to repeat it. So another training tweak, and this is one that's really easy to do and doesn't take any extra time, throw in more strides into your easy runs. So here we just talked about run your easy runs easier, but we're also saying at the end of some of your easy runs, throw in 6 20-second strides. Why is this? Because a stride is a little drill that you can do on somewhat tired legs to promote good form. It also reminds your body how to run fast. And even if you aren't doing much speed work, doing some strides can make a huge difference in your training. So this is a perfect solution to a runner who just isn't at a place in their training where they want to build volume and speed. We talked about this a little bit last week. You really don't want to introduce both aggressively at the same time. And strides are a great little drill to do. So add in 1 to 2 of your runs per week at the end of your run, add in 6 20-second strides where you run fast, hard with good form. What fast is for you is different for everyone. It's at a harder effort where you're having to breathe heavily and run at an effort that may not feel comfortable. And focus on your form when you're running fast rather than your speed. And then do that for about 20 seconds or use trees, telephone poles, and then recover by jogging until you catch your breath. And do it again for 20 seconds. Another nice thing about strides, especially on a treadmill, and I know a lot of us are on treadmills these days, it's just another way to pass the time and mix things up without having to do a lot of speed.
Yep, great. We love adding strides to our runs for our runners and of all ages. And it really does help kind of keep your neuromuscular sense sharp and allows you to get in a little bit of extra a little bit of speed and just fire up your muscles and right. It's a great way to add some variety without adding a lot of intensity. And similar to that is race pace surges in long runs. And you know, our long runs can get very monotonous. And first of all, they can be boring if you're, you know, just out running by yourself and maybe you're, you know, need a mental break. But you know, adding some race pace surges allows us to dial in some race pace. Again, doesn't add a ton of intensity, but varies up what we're doing and breaks up the long run. I know a lot of our runners, when we do that in their runs, we'll say like halfway through a run, add in some surges. And they always say, oh, that was great. That really broke up the run for me and varied it up. And it changes the muscle use too. So that's another thing that you can do. And it helps you start to dial in race pace as well.
So can you explain how you would add in surges into a long run?
I typically put them in at like halfway through. I say like, if it's a 16 mile long run, 8 miles easy. And then 10 times 1 minute at maybe 10K pace, maybe half marathon pace, depends on what, you know, what we're looking at, but usually like 10K tempo pace, but then a good long recovery. So like 1 minute at tempo pace, 3 minutes easy or 4 minutes easy. It's not, we're not trying to work your anaerobic system. We're not trying to add high intensity. We're not even working lactate threshold. We're working variety in muscles, working, dialing in effort, dialing in pace, and just varying up, you know, just kind of changing up that long run and adding some variety into the long run. So usually a longer recovery. So a lot of times it'll be 1 minute at race pace or whatever pace, and then 3 to 4 minutes easy. And then again, and look, if you do 10 times 1 minute at race pace, 3 minutes at, you know, 3 minutes easy, that's 40 minutes of your long run eaten up by this, you know, changing up the pace. And so then you're done and you're almost the end of your long run.
Yeah. And it's something else to focus on too. And for those who run long runs on courses that may not be as easy to generate a 10K pace, for example, just go by effort, 10K right. effort, half marathon effort. The point isn't really the pace as much as it's the effort and mixing things up and using different stimuli during your long run. So the next thing is, and I really love this one, and that is, we understand the long run is social. And for many people, the long run, it's not just about training and getting in the long run, but it's also about meeting up with friends and having the opportunity to connect each week with your group. So we get that. But for those who are willing to think of it, zoom out a little bit, you do not have to do a long run every week to achieve fitness for a marathon. In fact, for a lot of master's runners, it's ideal to do a long run every 10 days, or dare I say every 2 weeks. So for some runners, for example, you can do something where 1 week you do a long run of 14 miles. The next week, your long run is maybe 8 to 10 miles. And then the next week, your long run is 15 or 16 miles. So it's kind of like a stair step. You go up and then down a little, up, down a little. And the reason to do that obviously is recovery. Not everybody recovers from long runs the same, especially as master's runners. Some folks are able to recover pretty quickly from a long run, especially those where that is the bread and butter of your training and has been for years. That cumulative mileage, when you run a long run, it doesn't shock your body. But for other folks who maybe do one marathon a year, building up that mileage again, it's a shock to your system. So maybe it's not the best idea as a master's runner to do that every week and instead do it every other week, or do something where you run long on a Sunday and then the following 2 weeks, 10 days later, you're doing your long run on a Wednesday. And we find a lot of our runners are, for example, in the medical field where maybe they don't have a traditional schedule where they're off on the weekends. So it kind of works out that way where some runners are doing their long runs on a random Wednesday because that works out with their shifts. But think about it in terms of how you recover from your long runs. And if you're finding as a master's runner that long run on Saturday puts you out all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and you're barely able to run on Monday, maybe you're a great candidate for not doing the long run every single week. And we promise it will not impact your overall fitness. You'll still get to the start line fresh and healthy, and dare I say, maybe even healthier and fresher because you're not doing it every week. At least I think you were going to say something about that.
Well, I was going to say, we talked about this, I think, when we talked about my Chicago training. That's what I did for Chicago, was just out of necessity. It wasn't planned. It was just the way things worked out. I think I got in a long run every 2 weeks. Sometimes it was more than 2 weeks. And what I would do, you were talking about that kind of that stair step, you know, kind of long run. And then I would, and I've done this with, you know, a lot of the runners that we coach, we do this. When you kind of step back that next week, you might put in a midweek medium long run. So 1 week I might do 16 on the weekend, but I was doing 8, you know, in the middle of the week. The next weekend I might do 8 or 10 on the weekend, but I'm doing another 8 or 10 midweek. So I have sort of similar mileage, but it's spread out differently. So that's just another, that's worked well for me. And that's what we've been doing with some of our runners. And we have regularly spaced our long runs out for our runners, especially our master's runners or runners who are just more prone to injury or runners who just don't have a lot of time. We've spread out the long runs with no ill effects. Everyone's been well prepared. They've done well in their marathon. So you definitely, there's no rule of thumb that you need to have a long run every Saturday.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So next thing in training tweaks, and this is important for all ages, but especially as we get to be masters athletes and we start to lose muscle mass, strength training. And strength training doesn't mean you have to go to the gym for an hour and lift heavy weights and have a lot of, you know, a lot of complicated equipment. Strength training can be 15 to 20 minutes. We say 2 to 3 times a week, really core, glute, hip, single leg stability focus. You do not need fancy equipment, but really just functional strength, regularly incorporated.
And you want to mention mobility too.
Yeah, similar, right. Mobility, again, as we get older, these are all things that are great for when we're younger, but they become really critical when we're older. Mobility is range of motion. So working on your range of motion and improving range of motion, and that can be done before, during, or after your runs.
So in addition to strength and mobility, and this is something that we all can be better at doing, and I get this too, and that is doing a dynamic warm-up before your run. We understand that sometimes you only have an hour in the morning, for example, and it's really hard once you're dressed and ready to go. You just want to get out the door. Spend just one, even if it's just 1 to 3 minutes, doing some drills, doing some dynamic stretching. It's going to make a difference in your run. At the very least, it's going to make that first mile not feel so rough, especially if it's cold. When we get out into the cold, especially as we get older and we're running on cold muscles, it's just, you feel so much tighter. It's just harder to do. And not to mention, and it can lead to injury sometimes. So really try to warm up inside, something as simple as doing loop bridges fast, sort of at the rhythm of your cadence, is a great way to warm up your glutes. It doesn't have to be anything complicated. Just doing some movements, that hip swings, leg swings, allowing your body, it sends a signal to your body from your mind that, hey, it's time to run. But it also allows you to head out the door without super stiff muscles. And then, of course, as part of your warm-up, take your first mile easy, really easy. I know for me, it's not something that is hard to do. I automatically run my first mile easy. I don't feel I have a choice. It's just how I feel when I start out my run. But I know for some folks, you just want to get going, but try to get in the mindset that the first mile, it should be your slowest. Plus, it's really nice when you finish a run to see that you ran a little negative split. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, it always feels good to finish strong and feel good running strong. Running in all conditions, other than dangerous conditions like ice or thunderstorms, obviously, but get outside. And first of all, just the running outside, we always think is just kind of better all around than running on a treadmill. Running on a treadmill, perfectly acceptable substitute when it's not great out, when it's dark out, you can't get out for whatever reason, totally fine. But when you can get outside, running in all sorts of weather, and we had a great example of this past weekend. It was kind of rainy and gross for here, and also kind of northeast and up in the northeast, where a lot of our runners run, and they were really glad that they went out and ran, because you know what, we don't know what race day is gonna turn out to be, especially Boston. We've had all sorts of weather. So if you are out running in all sorts of conditions with the right gear, obviously you get that mental confidence that you can handle anything on race day.
For sure. And similar sort of, we don't mean to cause punishment to anyone as we're telling everyone to run in not so ideal conditions, because we want you to prepare for ice for race day. We also really encourage people to think about the workouts that you hate the most and to actually do more of those. So if you're someone who really, really hates doing tempo runs, it's probably a good idea to do some tempo runs. And tempo runs aren't super fun, because think about it, you're running, you don't get much of a break. It's not like a track workout or an interval workout where you're running for a shorter period of time, doing some recovery jogs. It makes the time go fast. A tempo run mentally is really hard, and it's also hard physically. So that's probably something you want to work on. What's a good way to do a tempo run? You do not have to run 20 minutes at marathon pace. That's it. You can actually break up your tempo runs too. So a good example would be 5 blocks of 4 minutes at marathon pace where you have a 1 minute recovery jog in between. So you kind of feel like it's almost like an interval workout. It breaks it up a little bit, makes the time go by a little bit better, but it also each time you recalibrate when you go into the next 4 minute segment so that you're not by the end of your tempo run, just completely bored, zoned out and not running at your race pace that you need to practice. So moral of the story, look at your overall training, think about in past years, the workouts that you've hated the most, ask yourself why, and at least do a few of those so that you don't hate them so much.
Yeah, I think the theme there and for some of these tips and really goes towards, as we get older, sometimes wanting to stay in our comfort zone is get out of your comfort zone. So, going out in weather that you may say like, hey, I think I just want to get on the treadmill. It's raining outside. No, go outside, get out of your comfort zone, do a workout that doesn't, that you aren't necessarily comfortable with. Run a tune-up race. That's another one. We're always kind of like, no, I'll just keep training. A tune-up race can be scary. Like, not scary, but just it takes some effort to get out of your comfort zone and kind of go test your fitness. But it's a great way to not only get in some speed work because you're really motivated when you're actually running speed work when you're running a race is much easier than when you're on your own. But also gives you a benchmark for where is your fitness? What is, have you progressed or, what do you need to work on? So again, getting out of that comfort zone and mixing things up by doing a tune-up race.
And that tune-up race leads us to our next one, which is vary your fuel. If you're someone that's always used the same product for fueling, there is absolutely no harm in trying a new product because who knows, maybe that will work better for you. If it doesn't work better, then you'll know well before race day. And what better way to work on your fueling than during a tune-up race? So when we say vary it, we're not saying vary the time in which you take your fuel. We really stand by. You really want to fuel with frequency. And generally we recommend 30 to 35 minutes. We know there are exceptions and we always encourage people to look into if that doesn't work for you, to look into it, working with a registered dietitian. But general rule of thumb is 30 to 35 minutes. You want to take a serving of fuel, but there is nothing wrong with varying up your fuel. Maybe you're someone that is sick of using chews and maybe you want to switch to a gel or vice versa. You can also do both. You can carry both of you with you when you race. You do not have to be wedded to one type of fuel when you race, but you do want to try it all. So a tune-up race is a great opportunity to do that. And as we get older, our digestion changes. So it's really important each year, even if this one thing has worked for you every year, you still want to test it out well before race day. And ideally during every training run that's over 70, 75 minutes, you should be working on your fueling so you can train your gut. We talk about this all the time. We cannot stress how important this is.
I was just talking to a runner today talking about doing a tune-up race and using that opportunity, even though it's just a 5K, using that opportunity to try out. She just got her box of Mortons and I said, you know what? Take one 10 or 15 minutes before that 5K and like start incorporating it into that. So that's a really good point that, vary up your fuel, test it out on these tune-up races and test out your racing shoes. If you're going to be using different shoes than you train in regularly, that's a good opportunity to test them out is a tune-up race too. So, you don't want to run in them too often, but you want to make sure that you're comfortable in them, they fit you well, and that they work out for you.
So here's two things, tweaks that were our last two tweaks in terms of training that encompass what you don't want to do. Number one, you don't want to run when you're sick. When we were younger, maybe you could get away with running when you were like on the cusp of getting sick or you were just getting over that flu or that really nasty cold and you want to head out for a run and you just feel like the fresh air helps you breathe better and it's fine. But honestly, everything is really complicated. It's not just about COVID anymore. It's just, there's a flu strain out there that's really knocking people out. And we're finding over and over whether one has tested positive for COVID or not. If you can just wait to run till your symptoms, whatever you have, are clear, in the long run, that is going to serve you much better. There used to be a lot of talk about you can run with a cold. And if the cold is above your neck, it's fine. If it's just your nose stuffy, it's fine. We know we're all adults, use your best judgment, but we're here to say, like, if you feel really sick, just don't do it. Don't try it. Don't try to use running as a remedy where you feel like you're going to get that fresh air and clear your nasal passages, because if you're coughing up a lung, the running is not going to help you. It may feel better temporarily, but then it may set you back a few more days. And it feels like common sense, but we get it. We've both been there where you're so stuffed up and you want to just go out in the cold and run and you feel so much better. But at all these strains this winter are, they're no joke. And we are dealing with, among our runners, so much sickness. And we're finding, just rule of thumb, don't run while you're sick. Wait till your symptoms subside, then wait a little longer, then do your first run. Guess what? You're not going to lose any fitness. You're actually going to be much better off. And then lastly, in terms of what not to do, don't do that extra mile or that extra interval if you're already super fatigued. Sometimes your schedule may call for 8 intervals of something, for example, but let's say on the 7th interval, you're just spent. You're just like, oh my God, that was so hard. And you feel like you got a lot out of your workout. If you're feeling off, you don't have to do the 8th interval. It's not anything written in stone. It's just, these are guidelines, not mandates. And similarly, if you're running a long run and let's say it was an extra hilly run and you got to 16, it's supposed to be an 18 miler, but by 16 and you've done everything right with your nutrition and all of that, you're just feeling extra, extra fatigued and you feel like your form is being compromised. Probably not the best idea to run that last couple of miles. It's not going to make a bit of difference in your training, but wow, we've had so many runners who go out for that extra mile and they end up regretting it. And not just our runners. We've been there with runners. You trip, you fall. Like, there's just like a lot of things that can happen when you decide to do that. Well, I might as well run this last mile, even though my schedule tells me not to, or I don't feel well at all. So just really do a body check before you make those decisions and know that that little extra bit isn't going to make a bit of difference in your training.
Other than keeping you healthy, which leads us to our next set of tweaks, which is, again, more important as we enter the masters running and grandmasters running ages. But recovery is really important. And I was just talking to one of our runners recently, and he was setting goals for his next marathon cycle. And he was looking at a lot of, you know, running goals and training goals. And I said, let's look at recovery and sleep. And like, let's look at some other things. Like, how about sleep? Like, maybe make a goal getting a certain amount of sleep every night, or consistent sleep. So that's the first one on our recovery tweaks list, because that is the easiest and the most proven to affect recovery the most, is sleep. So sleeping more, just in sleeping consistently. So, you know, it's set a time that you get into bed every night. Hopefully you can get out of bed at the same time and just get into a consistent sleep pattern. And it's not easy for everyone, especially as we get older, women go through menopause, maybe waking up more at night, but kind of get into a routine where you're, you know, you're getting off your electronics early enough, you're winding down, you're comfortable in your room. Maybe you've got your Lagoon pillow, but whatever it is that helps your sleep stay consistent. Focus on that and make that part of your, you know, like I said, part of your goals and your process goals is getting a certain amount of sleep per night.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes. We know that there are a lot of people out there that struggle with sleep, and we sympathize and empathize. And for sure, having a quality mattress, quality pillow. Thanks, Lagoon Pillow, for sponsoring our podcast. A little shout out to Lagoon Pillow. Code will be in the show notes. But also, trying not to get anxious when you do wake up is really key. Have some systems in place. So if you are someone that you are frustrated where you wake up at 3 a.m. and you're like, oh gosh, I really want to sleep. I know I need to sleep. I can't sleep. Have something by your bed to help you sleep. Maybe it's some sort of, like, you can read a book or something for a little bit. The worst thing you can do is look at your phone. So if you're someone that wants to look at your phone at 3 a.m, maybe it's a good idea to charge your phone elsewhere away from your bed, so it's not so easy to access. It's the worst thing you can do. And then also just trying to think of some things that relax you. I don't want to go as far as saying meditation, because that's a whole other topic. But if you do meditate, that's a great thing. If that's not your jam, we understand. Just thinking about thoughts that relax you and not thinking about all the things you need to do the next day or the state of the world. Those are not things you want to think of.
Or the fact that you're awake and that how you're going to get back to sleep and now you're awake and start panicking. Yes. Right now. You're never going to get back to sleep. Like that kind of that thought process, that cycle of thoughts that start to go through your head. So yeah, finding some way to get back to sleep. So that's certainly, like I said, our top recovery tweak, but related to sleep or another in addition to sleep is our nutrition. And in terms of recovery, protein is really key. So a lot of times we need to actually take a closer look at what are we taking in during the day and how much are we taking in. Again, making sure you're getting enough nutrients, especially as our marathon, for those training for marathons, as marathon training increases and your load's increasing, is your nutrition increasing the same? You know, we've got to make sure we're keeping up. And I just, again, same thing. These are discussions that come up with our runners all the time. Same thing, having a discussion with a runner this week about where is your nutrition now that we're getting into peak mileage, and them realizing, yeah, I probably haven't adjusted my nutrition, but specifically that protein helping with recovery.
And also helping with recovery and helping with sleep is managing stress outside of running during the day. So how can we manage stress? Well, I know right now a real easy fix to manage stress is to limit your time on social media. And why is that? Because the news is so dark right now. It is so dark. So kind of figuring out, you know, you want to be informed. We're not here. We're not your parents to say, don't go on social media, but just manage the content you're taking in. Think about what you're reading, what you're listening to, and trying to figure out what makes you less anxious if you're someone that's struggling with stress. And then surround yourself not only with content that makes you happy and at least calm, but with people who make you happy and calm. So in terms of setting up structures in your family, like if you're finding that the most stressful time of day in your family is dinner and homework time at 6 at night, we went through this for many years. I mean, we totally understand. You're carpooling, you're also trying to get dinner on the table, and you're also trying to manage homework. And maybe you also worked a really long day and your wick is really short. So figure out some systems, especially as you're training for a marathon, where maybe you can take some shortcuts with respect to cooking. Maybe it's about having some meal kits, meal delivery. Maybe it's about food prep earlier in the week. Figuring out how to loop your family in, setting up a menu early in the week where you tell everyone what's on the menu for the week and you commit to that, where you don't even have to think about it because it's already been set, using the crock pot. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done to shortcut cooking. And I feel like at least when I am able to kind of plan ahead with that, it just makes all of the other variables I can control, which includes how much homework my child has that I need to support them with, or how many carpool runs I need to make at 7 at night, that helps me. So that's an example of how to manage stress a little bit. We know that a lot of stress is out of our control, but obviously being able to manage some stress that's within your control will optimize your sleep, which will optimize your recovery.
Yeah. And related to that is looking at, your habits outside of running, in your life outside of running. Maybe you are going through a really stressful time. Work is really stressful. Family stuff is coming in, and taking that into consideration, recognizing that you might have to dial back some training or get some more sleep to help your body recover more. But also similarly, do you sit all day at work? I mean, I know I've been sitting a ton recently, and every time I get up, I'm like, oh, so like, reminding ourselves, like what are our habits look like? What shoes are we wearing outside of running? You know, we pay so much attention to what shoes we wear when we run and getting fit for shoes and making sure we wear the right shoes. And then we may go barefoot around the house, or we may put on some shoes, high heels to go out somewhere or something. And usually what we see is that the shoe issues or issues that are coming up with knees or ankles or calves aren't necessarily related to running. They're related to what shoes we're wearing outside of running. So looking, also looking at what other activities we do. Are you walking your dog for, 3 miles twice a day, and that's adding extra time on your feet? Are you doing strength workouts every day, or doing some kind of challenge, a plank challenge or a sit-up challenge or something that, what else are you doing outside of running, including the stressors in our lives that you just talked about? But what, look at outside of running, and we tend to look so much at like, what does our running schedule look like, and making sure that's helping us avoid injury, but we forget the other 23 hours a day outside of running.
Absolutely. Driving too. Don't forget about that. Are you spending an inordinate amount of time in your car this winter? How does that impact your running? Thinking about how you can maybe keep some type of recovery tool, like a lacrosse ball in your car. So when you are at stops, you're able to at least do some massage and recovery, making sure you walk periodically. Again, some of these things are out of our control, but how we respond to it can really help with our recovery. And speaking of that, massage, we know that massage is a luxury. We get it. But if you have access to a massage service, especially if you are training for a marathon, we cannot emphasize enough how helpful massage is. And there are a lot of massage schools out there that offer discounts. So if it is something that's above your price point, look into massage schools as well, because they have to accumulate so many training hours, and it's a great way to be able to get an effective massage. We don't really recommend, unless you know someone specific there, we don't recommend chains like a Massage Envy or something like that, because they may not know a runner's needs or a runner's body. But if there's someone who happens to work there that you trust, that's a different thing. But we would definitely encourage you to do research in terms of who to go to. But massage schools are also a great start, and they can recommend someone. But it shouldn't be a luxury for runners, but it is. And it's an important recovery tool.
Yeah. And then, kind of segueing into our final category of mental performance tweaks is finding things to do for fun that are not running related. Because when we are training for marathons, everything seems to revolve around running. That's what we talk about over the dinner table. That's what we think about. That's what we wake up every morning and plan our day around. So find things that are that you enjoy that are not running related. Maybe it's a good book that you have that you can unwind with at the end of the day, spending time with family, spending time with friends, going out to dance, and then take that into account when you're looking at how much activity you're doing. But whatever it might be, doing some artwork, just find something that takes your mind off of that constant focus on training and running so that your life is well balanced.
I'm actually doing that now because I'm not training for Boston this season, and it's hard for me because I've never been in a position where I'm not injured, I'm recovered, but I didn't get a qualifying time because I had surgery. I'm taking an adult tap class on Tuesday nights, and I love it so much. And
oh my gosh, I used to take that. I still have tap shoes upstairs in my room. I should come join you.
I would love. Okay, join me after you're done training, because I was
it
does not dovetail great with training.
No, because, right.
But I mean, I'm very rusty. It's been 30 years since I put on a pair of tap shoes, but the neuromuscular capability is still there. And it's fun to kind of connect my mind to my body. And it's a very different exercise, obviously, than running. But I think for me, it's exactly what you said. It brings me joy. It's a challenge, but it has nothing to do with running. And I really needed to do something like that, where I was moving my body and not just thinking about training, because it is out of my routine to not be training for Boston right now during this month. So it's been really fun.
I love that. So that, like you said, segues into our mental performance tweets, one of which is find your joy. So that is, I love that you've done that. And that is what we need to, again, marathon training can be very mentally draining. And, remember why you're doing it. What do you enjoy about it? What is it about the training that brings you joy, and focus on that, and write it up, put it on your mirror if you have to, like write it down somewhere where you can see that reminder of what brings you joy.
Yeah. So like our next category of tweaks is mental performance tweaks. And we're really excited because next week we're going to be interviewing a mental performance coach. So a lot of this, I'm sure she'll touch on as well, but this is advice that we give to our runners and to ourselves and each other. And first of all, visualization. We talk about this a lot, but visualization isn't just visualizing you running on the Boston race course. It's also visualizing what to do in certain scenarios that you anticipate, because you know yourself. So let's say you're someone like where around mile 19 to 21 during a marathon, that is when you start feeling defeated. Visualize that. Visualize you having that feeling on the Boston course, and think of what you're going to do during that moment, during your visualization. What are you going to do? You're going to talk yourself out of that moment, because it's just a moment. It doesn't define your race. If you need fuel, you're going to take your fuel. You're going to generate the crowd around you to bring you energy and positivity. But anticipate the moment and visualize that moment so you can be prepared.
Yep, definitely. And also, you know, not focusing on what you have done, not what you haven't done. So, if you've skipped a run, or if you are, you know, if you were sick for a week or whatever, don't let that, you know, think, don't let that derail your mental progress. Don't let that, make you think that you're not running well. Just because you're out of your routine, or maybe not following a training schedule that is traditional, that, you know, you're still making progress. Focus on what you have done and what you, you know, what the steps that you've taken to make progress versus what might have changed, or maybe a little bit of lapse in training. So that's, I think that's really important. I think some people tend to think like, oh no, I was on vacation for a week and now I'm totally, no, you really aren't, you know, you're fine. Look at everything you've done leading up to this, the foundation that you've built, and kind of take a step back and look at the big picture, I guess is sort of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Zoom out and think of all of the training you've done. As a master's runner, you have that advantage. You have many years of training under your belt, many, many miles. And we talk about this a lot, that cumulative training makes a big difference. If you missed a few runs, that doesn't take away from those miles that are under your feet from many years of training. And also in terms of setting goals, I really like how both you and I set race goals. And that is, we don't decide on our time goals at the beginning of the season. We don't say, well, this year I want to train to get an X time. No, we train, we go through the process. And then as our training falls into place, we do a few tune-up races. And based on our performance in those tune-up races and how our body is responding to the training, then we say, you know what? I think I can run a race in about this range, and this is what I'm going to try. What does that do? First of all, it doesn't attach, you do not become attached to a number, which can derail your focus. And then secondly, it you're not punishing yourself, because this should be fun. You should enjoy the process. And if you are training and constantly thinking of a number in your head, it really takes away from the process. Again, we've talked about this before. We're not saying don't set time goals. We're saying wait to set your goals until you see how you respond to your training. This allows you flexibility and doesn't cause you to feel disappointed in yourself, which you never should feel, because the training in and of itself is so hard, and that in and of itself is an accomplishment.
And that's why we talk about process goals versus time goals. So think about the process. What there are certainly goals you can set during the process. And I think you know, we talked about doing a tune-up race, but I think that that comes into play with mental performance as well, because that lets you visualize yourself racing. It lets you kind of go through your pre-race jitters and work those out, and kind of gain the confidence that you're ready for race day.
And lastly, in terms of a mental performance tweak, and this is, find your joy, be kind to yourself, and find a purpose that's greater than your race. So with all of this, when you get out there and you've finished all your training and you're on that start line as a master's runner, be so proud of where you are. Think about all the people that would just kill to be in your position of health, where you are able to not only run, but indulge yourself with setting a goal and with having the opportunity to compete against a lot of really badass athletes. And also understand that this is a joyful hobby that we all get to pursue, and having the opportunity to not only train with friends, but to get out there and actually legit compete, have fun doing it. Regardless of the outcome, you are still you. You are still the same person. You are still loved. You are still valued. And you will have another experience under your belt that you'll be able to talk about for years to come. The time matters in that moment, but it will not matter beyond that. And just remember to not beat yourself up as you head into this training cycle, and to just be kind to yourself and hold on to that joy, even during those moments that are really tough, including during your race.
Yeah. Like I think you hit on briefly a moment ago, is that we get to do this. This is, we've all chosen to do this. We get to do this. Not everybody can. And just appreciating all the work that went into it. Like you said, regardless of what the result is, but I think that's an important taking, and again, zooming out and looking kind of at the bigger picture. is really important, especially as we get entrenched in marathon training. And especially as we're, again, we're going back to what we started talking about at the beginning, is masters runners. You know, we've been doing, a lot of us have been doing this for a long time. A lot of us may or may not be hitting our goals that we, our times that we did several years ago, but really keeping perspective of that we've chosen to do this, we get to do this, and we've worked really hard to be at that start line. So I think that's an important reminder of the mental approach to training.
Amen. So Lisa, this was fun. We hope that anyone who's still with us, thank you. We hope that you got some tweaks out of this episode that you're able to implement in your training. And if you enjoyed this episode, we would so appreciate if you could rate and review our podcast. This helps us grow. We always receive such nice email from folks that we so appreciate. We appreciate you listening. But if you wouldn't mind going on to the platform where you listen to us and leaving a review, it really helps us tremendously. We can't thank you enough. Thank you to the few folks who left us reviews last week. We really appreciate them. We read every single one and we are so grateful. So Lisa, this is getting me really excited to watch Boston again this year. I'm excited that we're going to be up there. We've talked about this before. We will be leading another shakeout run. We will be part of a panel put on by the BAA that we're really excited about with Cherie Louise Turner of Women's Running Stories. So just about 2 months away, we cannot wait. So in the meantime, best of luck, everyone, with your training. Run well, and we'll see you next week. Lisa, I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.